For those of you not in the States, you should know that it is in fact Labor Day over here. And I don't need to make the joke about not working on Labor Day, because it's more than just that sort of holiday. But it is informally recognised by many as the end of summer. And celebrated as such by cooking outside on barbecue grills and taking a slightly chilly last swim of the summer, and maybe some fireworks and kite flying and picnic and sing-along. Maybe some sing-alongs. Does anybody sing along? You know, campfires and acoustic guitars and that sort of thing. But so, since many of you will be out doing those activities, for the rest of you, let's tip our hats Egyptward. Good evening. It's Monday, the 4th of September 2006, and it's Miette's Bedtime Story Podcast. The Conjurer Made Off with the Dish by Naguib Mahfouz. "The time has come for you to be useful," said my mother to me, and she slipped her hand into her pocket, saying, "Take this piaster and go off and buy some beans. Don't play on the way, and keep away from the cars." I took the dish, put on my clogs, and went out, humming a tune. Finding a crowd in front of the bean cellar, I waited until I discovered a way through to the marble table. "A piaster's worth of beans, mister," I called out in my shrill voice. He asked me impatiently, "Beans alone? With oil? With cooking butter?" I didn't answer, and so he said to me roughly, "Make way for somebody else." I withdrew, overcome by embarrassment, and returned home defeated. "Returning with an empty dish?" my mother shouted at me. "What did you do? Spill the beans or lose the piaster, you naughty boy?" "Beans alone? With oil? With cooking butter? You didn't tell me," I protested. "You stupid! What do you eat every morning?"
I don't know."
"You good for nothing! Ask him for beans with oil." I went off to the man and said, "A piaster's worth of beans with oil, mister." With a frown of impatience, he asked, "Linseed oil? Nut oil? Olive oil?" I was taken aback and again made no answer. "Make way for somebody else," he shouted at me. I returned in a rage to my mother, who called out in astonishment, "You've come back empty-handed, no beans and no oil." "Linseed oil, nut oil, olive oil, you didn't tell me," I said angrily. "Beans with oil means beans with linseed oil."
"How should I know?"
"You're a good-for-nothing, and he's a tiresome man. Tell him beans with linseed oil."
"How should I know?"
I went off quickly and called out to the man while still some yards from his shop, "Beans with linseed oil, mister." "Put the piaster on the counter," he said, plunging the ladle into the pot. I put my hand into my pocket, but didn't find the piaster. I searched round for it anxiously. I turned my pocket inside out, but found no trace of it. The man withdrew the ladle empty, saying with disgust, "You've lost the piaster. You're not a boy to be depended on." "I haven't lost it," I said, looking under my feet and round about me. "It's been in my pocket all this time." "Make way for somebody else, and don't make trouble." I returned to my mother with an empty dish. "Good grief, you
you idiot boy.
The piastre.
What of it?
It wasn't in my pocket.
Did you buy sweets with it?
I swear I didn't.
How did you lose it?
I don't know.
Do you swear by the Quran you didn't buy anything with it?
I swear.
There's a hole in your pocket.
No, there isn't.
Maybe you gave it to the man the first time or the second.
Maybe.
Are you sure of nothing?
I'm hungry.
She clapped her hands together in a gesture of resignation.
Never mind, she said. I'll give you another piastre, but I'll take it out of your money box, and if you come back with an empty dish, I'll break your head.
I ran off for a run, dreaming of a delicious breakfast. At the turning leading to the alleyway where the bean cellar was, I saw a crowd of children and heard merry, festive sounds. My feet dragged as my heart was pulled towards them. At least let me have a fleeting glance. I slipped in amongst them and found the conjurer looking straight at me. A stupefying joy overwhelmed me. I was completely taken out of myself. With the whole of my being, I became involved in the tricks of the rabbits and the eggs and the snakes and the ropes. When the man came up to collect money, I drew back, mumbling, "I haven't got any money." He rushed at me savagely, and I escaped, only with difficulty. I ran off, my back almost broken by his blow, and yet I was utterly happy as I made my way to the cellar of beans. "Beans with linseed oil, for a piastre, mister," I said. He went on looking at me without moving, so I repeated my request.
"Give me the dish," he demanded angrily.
The dish?
Where was the dish? Had I dropped it while running? Had the conjurer made off with it?
"Boy, you're out of your mind."
I turned back, searching along the way for the lost dish. The place where the conjurer had been I found empty, but the voices of children led me to him in a nearby lane. I moved round the circle. When the conjurer spotted me, he shouted out threateningly,
"Pay up, or you'd better scram!"
"The dish!" I called out despairingly.
"What dish, you little devil?"
"Give me back the dish."
"Scram, or I'll make you into food for snakes."
He had stolen the dish, yet fearfully I moved away out of sight and wept. Whenever a passer-by asked me why I was crying, I would reply, "The conjurer made off with the dish." Through my misery, I became aware of a voice saying, "Come along and watch." I looked behind me and saw a peep show had been set up. I saw dozens of children hurrying towards it and taking it in turns to stand in front of the peep holes while the man began making his commentary on the pictures.
"There you've got the gallant knight and the most beautiful of all ladies, Zeynat al-Banat."
Drying my tears, I gazed up in fascination at the box, completely forgetting the conjurer and the dish. Unable to overcome the temptation, I peered over the piastre and stood in front of the peephole, next to a girl who was standing in front of the other one, and there flowed across our vision enchanting picture stories. When I came back to my own world, I realized I had lost both the piastre and the dish, and there was no sign of the conjurer. However,
I gave no thought to the loss, so taken up was I with a picture of chivalry, love, and the deeds of daring. I forgot my hunger, I forgot the fear of what threatened me back home. I took a few paces back so as to lean against an ancient wall of what had once been a treasury and the seat of office at the Cady, and gave myself up wholly to my reveries. For a long while I dreamt of chivalry, of Zeynat al-Banat and the ghoul. In my dream I spoke aloud, giving meaning to my words with gestures. Thrusting home the imaginary lance, I said, "Take that, O ghoul, right in the heart!" And he raised Zeynat al-Banat up behind him. On his horse came back a gentle voice. I looked to my right and saw the young girl who had been beside me at the performance. She was wearing a dirty dress and coloured clogs and was playing with her long plait of hair. In her other hand were the red and white sweets called ladies' fleas, which she was leisurely sucking. We exchanged glances, and I lost my heart to her. "Let's sit down and rest," I said to her. She appeared to be agreeable to my suggestion, so I took her by the arm, and we went through the gateway of the ancient wall, and sat down on the step of a stairway that went nowhere, a stairway that rose up until it ended in a platform, behind which there could be seen a blue sky and minarets. We sat in silence, side by side. I pressed her hand, and we sat on in silence, not knowing what to say. I experienced feelings that were new, strange, and obscure. Putting my face close to hers, I breathed in the natural smell of her hair, mingled with an odour of earth and the fragrance of breath mixed with the aroma of sweets. I kissed her lips. I swallowed my saliva, which had taken on a sweetness from the dissolved lady's fleas. I put my arm round her, without her uttering a word, kissing her cheek and lips. Her lips grew still as they received this kiss, then went back to sucking at the sweets. At last she decided we should get up. I seized her arm anxiously. "Sit down," I said. "I'm going," she said simply. "Where to?" I asked irritably. "To the midwife, Ali," and she pointed to a house at the bottom of which was a small ironing shop. "Why?" "To tell her to come quickly." "Why?" "My mother's crying in pain at home. She told me to go to the midwife, Umali, and to take her along quickly."
"And you come back after that?"
She nodded her head in assent. Her mentioning her mother reminded me of my own, and my heart missed a beat. Getting up from the ancient stairway, I made my way back home. I wept out loud, a tried method by which I would defend myself. I expected she would come to me, but she did not. I wandered from the kitchen to the bedroom, but found no trace of her. Where had my mother gone? When would she return? I was bored with being in the empty house. An idea occurred to me. I took a dish from the kitchen and a piastre from my savings and went off immediately to the cellar of beans. I found him asleep on a bench outside the shop, his face covered over by his arm. The pots of beans had vanished, and the long-necked bottles of oil had been put back on the shelf and the marble top washed down.
"Mister," I whispered, approaching.
Hearing nothing but his snoring, I touched his shoulder. He raised his arm in alarm, and looked at me through reddened eyes.
"Mister, what do you want?" he asked roughly, becoming aware of my presence and recognizing me.
"A piaster's worth of beans with linseed oil."
"Eh?"
"I've got the piaster and I've got the dish."
"You're crazy, boy," he shouted at me. "Get out or I'll bash your brains in."
When I didn't move, he pushed me so violently I went sprawling onto my back. I got up painfully, struggling to hold back the crying that was twisting my lips. My hands were clenched, one on the dish and the other on the piaster. I threw him an angry look. I thought about returning with my hopes dashed, but dreams of heroism and valour altered my plan of action. Resolutely, I made a quick decision, and with all my strength threw the dish at him. It flew through the air and struck him on the head, while I took to my heels, heedless of everything. I was convinced I'd killed him, just as the knight had killed the ghoul. I didn't stop running till I was near the ancient wall. Panting, I looked behind me, but saw no signs of any pursuit. I stopped to get my breath back, then asked myself what I should do now that the second dish was lost. Something warned me not to return home directly, and soon I had given myself over to a wave of indifference that bore me off where it willed. It meant a beating, neither more nor less, on my return, so let me put it off for a time. Here was the piaster in my hand, and I could have some sort of enjoyment with it before being punished. I decided to pretend I had forgotten my having done wrong. But where was the conjurer? Where was the peep-show? I looked everywhere for them, but to no avail. Worn out by this fruitless searching, I went off to the ancient stairway to keep my appointment. I sat down to wait, imagining to myself the meeting. I yearned for another kiss redolent with the fragrance of sweets. I admitted to myself that the little girl had given me sensations I had never experienced before. As I waited and dreamed, a whispering sound came to me from far away behind me. I climbed the stairs cautiously, and at the final landing I lay down flat on my face in order to see what was behind it, without anyone being able to first spot me. I saw some ruins surrounded by a high wall, the last of what remained of the treasury and the chief Cady's house. Directly under the stairs sat a man and a woman, and it was from them that the whispering came. The man looked like a tramp, the woman like one of those gypsies that tend sheep. An inner voice told me that their meeting was similar to the one I had had. Their lips and eyes revealed this, but they showed astonishing expertise in the extraordinary things that they did. My gaze became rooted upon them with curiosity, surprise, pleasure, and a certain amount of disquiet. At last they sat down side by side, neither of them taking any notice of the other. After a while the man said, "For money." "You're never satisfied," she said irritably. "Sitting on the ground," he said, "you're crazy. You're a thief." He slapped her hard with the back of his hand, and she gathered up a handful of earth and threw it in his face. Then he sprang at her, fastening his fingers on her windpipe. In vain she gathered all her strength to escape from his grip. Her voice failed her, her eyes bulged out of their sockets, while her feet struck out at the air. In dumb terror, I stared at the scene till I saw a thread of blood trickling down from her nose. A scream escaped from my mouth. Before the man raised his head, I had crawled backwards. Descending from the stairs at a jump, I raced off like mad to wherever my legs might carry me. I didn't stop running till I was out of breath. Gasping for breath, I was quite unaware of my whereabouts, but when I came to myself, I found I was under a raised vault at the middle of a crossroads. I had never set foot there before, and had no idea of where I was in relation to our quarter. On both sides sat sightless beggars, and crossing it from all directions were people who paid attention to no one. In terror, I realized I had lost my way, and that countless difficulties lay in wait for me before I would find my way home. Should I resort to asking one of the passers-by to direct me? What, though, would happen if chance should lead me to a man like the vendor of beans or the tramp of the waste plot? Would a miracle come about whereby I'd see my mother approaching so that I could eagerly hurry towards her? Should I try to make my own way, wandering about till I came across some familiar landmark that would indicate the direction I should take? I told myself that I should be resolute and take a quick decision. The day was passing, and soon mysterious darkness would descend.